Growing up, I loved playing computer games, but I have not found something in adulthood that scratches that same itch. Video games don't do it. I can't use that controller. It's just not it for me. But oh my goodness, I am so glad I recently started playing June's Journey. Okay, June's Journey is like I Spy meets Carmen Sandiego, meets The Sims, meets horror movies. It's so wild and it's so, so fun to play. June's Journey is a hidden object mystery game with a captivating detective story taking you back to the glamour of the 1920s with a diverse cast of characters. Each new scene takes you further through a thrilling murder mystery story that sets the main protagonist, June Parker, on a quest to solve the murder of her sister and uncover her family's many secrets. June is fabulous. She has a fabulous little hat and feather in her cap. She's at this family estate on this gorgeous island that you can decorate, which you know that I love to do. And then as you're going, you go into different rooms of the house. You find clues that are going to lead to the suspicious murder of June's sister and brother-in-law. It's so dark. Like, you're looking for clues inside of a murder scene photo. But also, all I want to do is find the trophy and the riding crop and the muddy footprint that might be a clue about, wait, was there another person there? It's so intriguing. It's so fun. I love playing it. At the end of the day, just sitting on the couch, you know, that state of mind where you're not ready to go to bed yet. You don't want to be watching TV anymore. It's sort of just background noise. I want to be looking around my little island for clues. And that's why I love having June's Journey. Right now, I'm in the chapter where we are really uncovering some salacious information. There seems to have been a third person there the night of the murder. And that is not what we believed at the beginning. So, you know, I'm ready to figure out more about this mystery third person because I think it might be the key to everything. And so you better believe I'm about to dive back in, and you can do just the same. Escape reality and immerse yourself in the world of June Parker. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android.
Hi, everybody. We have a really great episode for you today, as per usual. If yeah, I don't say so myself,
you can count on it.
It's so good. I learned a lot. Sammy is the best, and I fucking love
you, Henley.
And Emily is also the fucking best, and I just love you too so much.
We all love each other.
And I also love our patrons.
So much. And yeah, I love our patrons. Also.
We love our patrons very much, and we have a new few members of Tony fucking Collette's inner circle. Tony called, they answered, and they are Rosie Valencia, Kate, Alex H, and Maddie. Welcome to the Apex.
Welcome.
We love you, and we're very happy to have you here.
We love you.
We love you. We're so happy to have you. And there are a few people who Tony called, and they didn't answer at first. They're busy. They're doing something else. Mm-hmm. They were
riding out in boats.
Out in boats and stuff. And then Tony was like, no, I need them. And then she called back, and they answered the call. And now they're in Tony fucking Collette's inner circle. And we're also thrilled to have them. They are Corin Fleming, Sarah, and Melissa Andrade. Welcome to the Apex.
Welcome.
We love you, and we are so happy that you are here.
You've reached the Apex, and it's so great. You guys are going to love it.
It's so great.
And you're also going to love this episode. And here it is.
This is Emily,
Henley,
and Sammy, and you're listening to Too Scary, Didn't Watch.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Too Scary, Didn't Watch, the horror movie recap podcast for those too scared to watch for themselves. I'm Emily, and I am too scared to watch scary movies.
I'm Henley, and I'm also too scared to watch scary movies.
I'm Sammy. I like watching scary movies, and I watch them so you don't have to.
Ooh!
Sammy,
ooh, baby.
You, all of you.
You.
Everybody out there.
The impersonal you. To whomever it applies.
Mm-hmm.
Was that the proper use of whomever? Yes.
Oh, whom throws me every time? Whomst knows, you know?
Whomst knows?
Honestly, whomst knows? What is up with us?
Well, we had a great week because Sammy's documentary came out this week.
And it did.
For those of you who haven't watched it yet, I know a lot of you have because you sent us messages on our Instagram, which made us very happy.
Yes, very sweet.
So sweet for all those who watched. It is on the Discovery Channel app, which is called Discovery Plus. You can download it, get a free 7-day trial, baby, and watch Sammy's amazing documentary, Attack of the Murder Hornets. Is it murder? Yeah. Is it? It's hornets plural, right?
Or
is
hornets it plural?
Okay, that's what correct. I thought.
There's more than one. There is more than one.
There is more than one. Guys, it's a must see. It's so fucking good. I loved it's every so cool. second of it. It's so good.
I saw that the entomology community is pretty mad about the title of the movie because you know the name Murder Hornet. The entomologists in the movie all said like they had a mixed feelings about it because it's what got everyone's attention and what kind of got all this public support, but it's also creating a lot of fear that's pretty unnecessary. And we get into that in the doc. So if these entomologists would just watch it.
Look, you're not going to title the movie a movie about some bugs that could be scary, but don't worry, it's all fine. You can't you can't call it that.
You've got to have a snappy title. We've got to get those eyeballs title. On the screen.
Get those clicks. Get those clicks.
Some other movie news that happened this week is, well, first of all, they announced that the next Ari Aster film will be starring Joaquin Phoenix.
Pretty cool.
Another A24 pick.
Wow.
Unclear if it's a horror. I couldn't quite tell.
I feel like Ari Aster's not going to not make a horror, right?
He said he might not make a horror. Yeah, he said he was hoping his next movie would be a comedy, but I kind of feel like he's got to make a horror.
Joaquin Phoenix is just like, I really enjoy him as an actor, but he also is just a creepy dude, I feel like.
He has a heavy presence, yeah.
Yeah, so even if it's not a horror movie, I feel like this movie
you're
will
gonna
have...
be creeped out.
Yeah, they'll be spooked. Creepy vibes, for sure. With sure. Ari Aster, Joaquin Phoenix combo. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But either I'm going to see it. I'm excited.
Definitely going to see it.
And
well, maybe not, but you know what I mean.
We'll probably talk about it if it is a horror. And more important movie news... Paddington 3 is officially in the works.
Oh my god. I mean, the biggest best news of the whole freaking year.
It really brightened my day on a day that I was feeling really stressed. My friend texted me the article and I was like, oh, thank you. Like, this is what I needed.
Incredible better. News.
And I must say, we had some really good casting suggestions. So anyone out there who's casting for Paddington 3.
Yes, casting team for Paddington 3, if you are listening, and I believe that you are. We have some thoughts and they are very good. In fact, I would like one of each of these movies, please.
Mm-hmm. We know that, you know, it's all about the villain in the Paddington movies. So some villain ideas we had were, Matt Berry would be great, but he's maybe not famous enough.
He might not be a famous enough follow to Hugh Grant.
So how's this for famous?
Keanu.
Keanu
would be amazing.
Ever heard of him?
Have you ever? I don't even have to say his last name because you know. That's the kind of fame we're talking about here.
Jeff Goldblum. Olivia Colman.
Oh, great Olivia Colman would be great.
And our probably favorite suggestion. Our favorite Rob Pattinson.
I mean.
Doing his British accent.
Oh,
I would love to see it.
God. If he does Batman and Paddington 3 back to back, I'll have to find him and marry him. I will have to. You listening, Rob? If that's what you want, here's the choice you gotta make.
Make it happen. Make it happen. And, you know, we gotta always... throw our support behind Toni Collette. She can do no wrong.
She would honestly be so good.
She would also be great. So that's our suggestions. Listeners and casting, make it happen.
I'm not saying that we should have final say, but I think the suggestions speak for themselves.
I agree.
What else happened to us this week? Anything?
What's up, Emily? Anything happened with you?
Well, I got this big old, I have it just sitting next to me by pure coincidence, this guide to tarot cards, like a whole big manual. It's one of those things. Have you had this happen in quarantine where you will order something and immediately forget and then it shows up on your door and you're like, what did I get? That happened with this, even though two days passed between the ordering and the arrival. but it showed up and I was like, oh yeah, I was so excited about that. And I really am excited so far. I've only read a few pages because it's like, you know, it's kind of textbooky and you got to take it all in. But I'm really excited to learn more about tarot. On my coffee table currently, I have this tarot book, a tarot deck, an Enneagram book, and two astrology books. So I've really leaned into a kind of lady, and I feel great about it.
Yeah, I'm excited because there's a lot to know about tarot, and I get intimidated.
There's a lot to know. I just want to have a more intuitive understanding.
You can do tarot readings from afar, right? Can we do some tarot readings for myself?
Yes, yes. Please.
I really feel like that needs to happen ASAP. We should start doing that.
I love it so much.
All right, get to studying.
I'm going to get to studying.
I'll get to it. But first, I got to do this podcast.
Yeah, baby.
Yes, you do. And let me tell you what we'll be talking about today. We are recapping Night of the Living Dead, a classic horror film from 1968. Probably the oldest one we've done on our main feed. We did Psycho as a bonus episode. It is directed by George Romero, written by John Russo and George Romero, starring Dwayne Jones, Judith O'Dea, Carl Hardman, Marilyn Eastman, Keith Wayne, and Judith Reilly. Two Judiths.
That must have been confusing.
Judith seems like a name in the 60s for sure.
Yeah, a lot of Judys.
I think for sure, a lot of Judiths. I knew a Judith in high school, but that's rare.
Yeah, not as common of a name
anyway.
Now. and it's available on Amazon Prime and Epix if you have that last week's episode. And on HBO Max. It's like streaming on a lot of different channels.
That's cool.
So if anybody wants to watch it, there's a way.
Great.
But I had never seen this movie, and I probably honestly never would have if it wasn't for this podcast. I don't usually go back and watch movies that are this
that old.
Yeah. Which sounds dumb. I feel like it makes me sound dumb, but I just don't have a short attention span. We've talked a little bit about this before. It's a different kind of viewing experience.
Yeah, exactly. It's not like better or worse. It's just you have to be ready for a different
experience. You know, I'm never in the mood for it, but whenever I do it, I always enjoy it. It's like that.
I think there's also something to be said where if you grew up like as a kid, or you wouldn't necessarily watch this movie as a kid, but if your parents or whatever showed you movies that were from a different era, it's like more fun to rewatch them as an adult, like for like nostalgic reasons. But coming to it cold, like after watching like 45 minutes of TikTok videos and then trying to watch a movie from like the 1960s.
Mission Impossible's on repeat. So yeah, that's like not the same kind of movie. I'm looking at Tom Cruise flying a helicopter like over and over and over again.
Yeah.
But you know, that said, it's very good, and it is fun to watch these movies that kind of became such influences for other movies to come, and like seeing kind of the beginnings of some of these tropes. And this is a zombie movie, and I'm sure influenced every zombie movie that came after it. So that stuff is all very cool.
Well, folks, another week, another cocktail. That's right, it's cocktail hour. This week, we are making a Kool-Aid, which I have taken upon myself to rename Ghoul-Aid. To make a Ghoul-Aid, you will need 1.5 ounces of vodka, 3/4 ounce of Midori, 3/4 ounce of DiSaronno, 1/2 ounce of fresh squeezed lime juice, 2 ounces cranberry juice, and 1 ounce fresh squeezed orange juice. You will shake all those ingredients with ice and strain into an ice-filled Collins glass and garnish with a lime wedge. Cheers.
I'm very curious. I guess we will do it in our bonus episodes because this is what we've been doing. But now that we're talking about it, I'm like, I want to know where zombies as an idea for horror movies started. Because it's a whole thing. People love zombies. Mm-hmm. There's like a fear I feel like that people have in real life that like zombie apocalypse is a thing that could happen. I don't really understand how that's possible. But zombies are such like a staple of the horror world. And I'm sort of like, where did, why?
So I actually know the answer to this.
Henley! Wow, I got to start asking more questions because you just never know when someone's going to write, have the answer immediately.
Well, so after doing a little digging into this movie, something that I discovered. Well, first of all, even though this is technically a zombie film, they never use the word zombie throughout the entire movie. They call it a ghoul.
Ghoul!
They call it a ghoul. But zombies initially come from Haitian culture. Mm-hmm. So it arises from Haitian folklore, in which a zombie is a dead body reanimated through various methods, most commonly magic. So that's where the term zombie came from. However, that history has really been like co-opted, erased 100%.
Right. They're like, we like this. We'll take this. Thank you.
And never give credit where credit's right. due.
Very unlike...
American,
European, American, white,
exactly.
Colonizers.
That is weird to hear that happened. Yeah, unexpected.
Also, and like a key difference is that in Haiti, it's like people become zombies through like magic or through voodoo or whatever. And now in American culture, it's through like usually scientific methods or just a different. Mm-hmm.
It's totally different.
And so they've really made it their own here in America. But anyway, yeah, so that's interesting. And also I think relevant in this movie because there's the main character, the hero of the movie is black.
Yeah.
Which
was in 1968.
In 1968. Yeah. Which George Romero says, like, he didn't give one thought to that when he cast him over and over again. People are like, oh, was this an intentional choice? And he was like, no, like, this movie had nothing to do with race, which just feels like, was he being honest?
Or? I think he is being honest. And I think it just, like, unintentionally became a different
movie.
Like, people take so much, like, I think if he had cast it with a white lead, it still would be a good movie, but it wouldn't have as much significance in film history and in obviously in black like representation in film. This is the first black lead in a horror film mm-hmm. ever. Mm-hmm.
And the last one for a long time.
Right. And he said that Dwayne Jones was just the best actor for the part.
Mm-hmm. Imagine that.
Right. Right. So, but yes, obviously the context of what was happening at the time adds, you know, different meaning to it.
Well, I'm sure the actor was thinking about that. I mean, we'll get into the plot of the movie, but
there are interviews with the actor where he was like, yeah, I was definitely thinking about this throughout the entire filming of the movie. And there's one moment where while they were filming, he was actually in a car driving somewhere with another actor and they were harassed by a group of teenagers who came at them with metal pipes or something. Jesus. And he was like, this is crazy. I've been playing a character all day who's trying to beat off zombies with metal pipes. And now I have to come out and be just a human being in the real world. And I'm facing something just as terrifying, like in my day to day life.
For the people who probably wrote the movie and made the movie other than him, it's just like, isn't this what would be wild in this zombie movie? And then that's his actual lived experience of like, as we've said many times, the world is the more horrifying thing. Reality is the scariest.
Mm-hmm. Right. Reality is definitely the scariest.
I read that that zombies can be kind of metaphors for a few different things. And I think you can, as a viewer, take from mm-hmm. it what you will. But this one did seem more like it's a metaphor, obviously, for what was the civil rights movement and what's happening in mm-hmm. America in the 60s. And then mm-hmm. What were some other ones? It was like, it was like a loss, the fear of the loss of your control of yourself, and mm-hmm. that how that could relate to slavery and like not being in control of your own body.
Yes.
And then also relevant to right now, it can be a fear of, you know, mass epidemics and...
Yeah.
Also, at the time when the movie was released, a lot of people drew the connection to the Vietnam War and saying that it was like representing war on American soil. And I don't know exactly what all the connections are there, but people were saying that people were making those connections.
Okay.
And people are also making the connections that it's an allegory for counterculture. Again, you know, I'd have to do a little thinking.
That just feels like a sentence. Like,
yeah, just a little thinking on that for a second.
You know what I mean? Like, it's a sentence you put in an essay in high school, and it's like, what are you trying to say?
But, okay, can I just tell you guys my favorite fun fact about this film?
Please.
Okay, so the U.S. movie rating system was instituted on November 1st, 1968, and this film was released on October 1st, 1968, so 1 month before any kind of rating system was put into place. Mm-hmm. So when this movie premiered, it premiered as a matinee, and all these kids went to go see it, like children. And in Roger Ebert. I just forgot his name. In his review, which, first of all, like, Roger Ebert, damn, he's been around for fucking
forever. Jesus Christ.
I mean, I know he's passed away now, but like, holy shit, he reviewed this film in 1968. He says the whole review is basically about how he was just in a movie theater with a bunch of kids, and
oh,
there was
God.
Only like a few adults in the entire theater, and like how it was really fun for the first half and the kids were really enjoying it, and then by the second half, like, things really take a turn and kids were just silent and weeping, and like kids had to got up and left, and he was like, this is fucked up. Like, it was really hard to watch it with all these children in the theater. Isn't that crazy?
I bet.
Yeah.
How traumatizing.
Interesting. Imagine there being no ratings for movies. Not that I think ratings always make the most sense, but at least it gives you, like, an idea.
Mm-hmm.
Being like, I don't know, Night of the Living Dead? I could probably bring my kid to that.
They're like, yeah, kids, go watch that. Like, their parents aren't even with them.
I was going to say, the title could have been a clue.
I know.
Could have been a clue.
Some other trivia I got is the budget was $114,000, which in today's money would be $847,400.
Yeah, still not a lot of money in today's money.
Mm-hmm. I know. And also, like, just is so crazy that Paranormal Activity was made for $15,000.
Yeah.
Like, wow. It just blows my mind every time I remember.
Every time.
It's amazing.
And this movie went on to make $30 million, which...
In today's money? In then day's money.
And today's money, that would be $223.6 million. So it made 263 Whoa. Times its budget.
Damn.
In any day's money.
In any day's money. That,
wow.
That translates across time.
Wow. So big success.
A big success, one of the most successful independent movies of all time. And unfortunately, George Romero saw very little profit from the film due to his lack of knowledge regarding distribution deals. The distributors walked away with practically all of the profits.
Oh, very cool. Corporations are good. They know what's up.
Yeah,
gotta
man.
Love corporations.
This is just kind of funny. Screenwriter John Russo appears as a zombie in the film who gets killed with a tire iron, and he also allowed himself to be set on fire for real when nobody else wanted to do the stunt. George Romero approved of his co-writer's zombie walk, And Russo stated, I was probably hungover.
Oh my God.
Okay, man.
That's real. That's very courageous to agree to be lit on fire in 1968. Feels like they haven't.
In these actors' rights times, it's also a shock that he didn't die.
When I'm hungover, I like can't get out of bed. Imagine being like, oh, I was hungover. Yeah, light me on fire. Like, what?
I know.
I kind of get it. I went skydiving hungover once and I was like not afraid at all. I was like, yeah, who cares?
Because you're like, I just want to kill myself.
I felt like dying inside anyways.
I'm already dead, whatever.
Emily, you will appreciate this, but Bosco chocolate syrup was used to simulate blood in the film. So you don't need to worry about any of the blood. It's all chocolate syrup.
It's all chocolate syrup. Is it black and white?
Yep. Yes, you can get away with that when you're making it black and white.
Not as much when it's not.
Nope.
That's all I got. So shall we watch the trailer? I watched the trailer before to make sure it like isn't one of those that gave everything away. And I think you guys are going to like it.
I don't know how I feel about that.
Welcome to a night of total terror. Night of the living dead, the dead who live on living flesh, the dead whose haunted souls hunt the living whose bodies are the only food for these ungodly creatures. Night of the living dead. A bizarre adventure in fear. An experience in shock more shattering than your strangest nightmare. Night of the living dead. A night with the dead who cannot die. A night of total terror. Night. Of the living dead.
I fucking love that.
The copy in that trailer. Night of the living dead. The dead who live, who should be dead. They hunt the live who live and are going to be dead from the death of the dead.
Night of the living dead.
Over and over again.
You might die from the dead who live but are alive and should be dead. Night of the living dead.
Oh my God. Yeah.
I loved that trailer. That was hilarious.
I knew you guys were going to like it. That's what all trailers should be like.
Yes. Trailer editors take fucking note. Screenwriters take note.
Screenwriters take note.
We loved it.
Yeah, I don't know. I couldn't tell why it was making me laugh so hard. I couldn't put my finger on it. I guess because he was just saying nonsense words.
I feel like they just told this guy to fucking go for it and there was no script.
He was like, man, just wing it.
So what's this movie about? Okay, got it.
Oh.
Oh boy.
Well, did it look spooky?
I was so scared.
It's great. This is really, really set the tone for us.
Perfect. I cannot wait.
Let's dive in.
I have tried a lot of meal kits in my day because I don't like to cook. I need as much help as I can get when it comes to meal times. But a lot of the kits I've tried, you know, they leave a little something to be desired. They're not super great quality, or maybe there's not great variety, or they feel just kind of unhealthy. So imagine my surprise when I found Marley Spoon and discovered it doesn't have to be that way. You can have it all. I'm so happy this podcast is sponsored by Marley Spoon. They created the best tasting meal kit money can buy, and with my code TOOSCARY, you can get up to 25 free meals. They have over 100 meals to choose from each week, so you will not be getting bored. Last night, I made a shrimp burrito bowl that was so good, and tonight I'm making a Shion-style cumin turkey burger with pickled veggies and five-spice fries. Excuse me, am I a five-star chef? You have any idea how boring all the stuff I usually make is? It's such a treat. And usually for something like this, I would pay probably $40 to have something delivered to me, and it would probably be gross and soggy by the time it got here anyways. So thank God for Marley Spoon. And you can customize many of the recipes. So whether you're looking for vegetarian, family-friendly, low-carb, they got you covered. They also have an online market of pantry essentials like snacks and ready-to-eat options. I'm telling you, you can have it all. I got a kit to make cookies in my first box. So experience the most personalized meal kit today with Marley Spoon. Head to marleyspoon.com/offer/2scary and use code 2scary for up to 25 free meals. That's right, up to 25 free meals with Marley Spoon. One last time, that's marleyspoon.com/offer/2scary for up to 25 free meals. And make sure you use my promo code 2scary so they know I sent you.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Let's dive right in.
All right. So we start with a car driving down pretty rural roads. Rural roads.
Rural roads. Rural roads.
The dead are dead. They cannot die. We are alive. They hunt the living. Living dead. On rural roads, they hunt the living.
Rural roads. Rural roads. Oh, God. And inside the car are a brother and sister named John and Barbara. They're in Pennsylvania. And they are driving to visit their father's grave. And John, the brother, is kind of complaining, like, oh, like it's so far. We come here for 15 minutes, but it's 6 hours, you know, or 3 hours each way. So 6 hours round trip to get here. And I guess their mom wants them to, like, it makes their mom happy. So she goes out. So they go out and refresh the flowers on his grave every once in a while. They're adults. I'm just trying to think of their ages. They are not like teenagers. They seem like adults. Although somewhere in the trivia, it said that another pair of people in the movie are teenagers, and they don't look like teenagers to me. So maybe teenagers in the 60s looked like full adults.
We've talked about this. Yes, in old movies, all the teenagers look like grown-ass adults.
Yeah, what is that? Why does that happen? I don't know.
So maybe these are supposed to be teenagers. I don't know. It looks like a woman and a man.
Okay, got it.
But so as they're about to, as they pull up to the cemetery and they're about to get out of the car, the radio kind of turns on and Barbara's already out of the car. John is still in the car and he's like, oh, Barbara, the radio came back on finally. And we hear through the radio, like, we're back after experiencing some like unexplained technical difficulties. And he's like, oh, whatever. Great. It's back on. Turns it off. Gets out of the car. They start walking towards their father's grave. And they set flowers down on it, and Barbara kind of kneels and prays, and John is kind of making fun of her, like, church was this morning. It's like, he's being kind of a dick to her at their dad's grave.
Yeah, like, now's not the time,
let
dude.
Let her pray. And he's kind of messing around and says, remember when we were kids and I hid behind that tree and I popped out at you and scared you real bad, and grandpa got so mad at me and he shook his fist at me and said that I would be damned to hell for what I did. And
jeez, Grandpa.
Wait, it's also funny. Remember how like shaking your fist at someone used to be a thing you could do if you were mad at them?
I'm gonna bring it back. I'm gonna start shaking my fist at people when I'm really mad.
It really feels like an old timey thing to do. It does. Like, shake your fist.
Let's bring it back.
Let's bring it back.
And while they're having this conversation, we see a man kind of walking around the cemetery in a zigzaggy pattern. As John is reminding Barbara of this time when they were kids, she's like, stop it, Johnny, stop it. And he says, oh my God, Barbara, you're still scared, aren't you? And she's just creeped out there in a cemetery. It's a spooky place. And she's getting irritated with him, says, you know, says,
is it
stop.
Daytime?
It's daytime. But she's still a little freaked, and she tells him to quit it, and he messes with her more, and he says, ooh, they're coming to get you, Barbara, which I feel like is a pretty famous line. It like seemed familiar, to me.
Somebody quotes that in another movie or something.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm sure because this is a famous movie, but yeah, it gave me deja vu, and I wish I could remember what other movie it is. Listeners, tell us, because I'm sure you know.
Tell us.
And he's kind of chasing after her and saying, they're coming to get you. Like, they're here, Barbara. And he points to the man that's walking around and says, there's one now. And he runs off, and she's embarrassed, feels like, oh, he's humiliated her in front of this man. And he's walking to the car. Johnny's walking to the car. She kind of bumps into the man, and he attacks her. And we get a look at his face, and he's kind of dark circles around his eyes. Looks like his cheeks are sunken in. And I mean, 60s makeup. It's not like The Walking Dead.
It's not convincing.
He's selling it, though. He's doing pretty good. Mm-hmm.
He's doing pretty good.
And she starts screaming. Johnny realizes that he's attacking her. He runs back, pulls the guy off of Barbara. They get in a fight. Barbara's super freaked out. They're kind of wrestling back and forth. And then the we'll call him the ghoul. The ghoul knocks Johnny over, and his head hits a tombstone, and he gets unconscious, knocked out, and Barbara can see that he's not getting up, and the ghoul is now coming for her. And so she runs to the car and gets in and locks the doors, and the keys aren't in the car. Johnny has the keys on him. Mm-hmm. And so the ghoul approaches the car and starts kind of banging on the windows. It's going, circling the car, kind of banging from all sides. Cool shots from inside of the car of it just attacking from all sides. And then it picks up a rock and smashes the window of the car, the passenger side window. She's in the driver's seat. She realizes, oh, fuck, I gotta get out of here. And she just releases the brake and just starts rolling away. They're parked kind of at the top of a small hill. So she just... it's like, well, I gotta go. And she starts...
She left her brother.
And she starts rolling down this hill and pretty quickly crashes into a tree.
Okay.
Which I read in the trivia that someone actually did crash this car on set. And so they like wrote it into the script. And they were like, oh, well, now that we have a crashed car, like might as well.
Might as well make the most of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Resourceful. And so she just gets out of the car and starts running. The ghoul is still pursuing her, so she just makes a run for it. She spots a farmhouse nearby and is kind of banging on the doors. Nobody's answering. And she sees the ghoul approaching again. So she just goes in and locks the door behind her. And she's in this house, and seemingly nobody else is in there. She's kind of... going room to room, checking. She's completely panicked, so freaked out. And she's kind of exploring each room, and it gets really quiet. And she goes into one room, and there's animal heads mounted on the walls, and it goes like, pew! It's like a really... it's a pretty, pretty loud jump scare. And I'll tell you, it got me.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody's in there. She kind of checks room to room. But then... she's looking out the window and we can see the ghoul looking in window to window and trying to figure out a way in. And she finds a telephone, picks up the phone, starts trying to dial 911. Phone line's dead. She can't use it. And the sun's starting to set. It's getting darker. And then she sees more ghouls coming. And
we get right into it.
Mm-hmm. Scary ghouls.
And so she starts to run upstairs. And at the top of the stairs, there is what looks like a decomposed human skull. And it is, I guess, the woman who lived there. And it's how George Romero built this little, made this little head, used ping pong balls for the eyes. But it totally freaks her out. She starts screaming and she tries to run out the front door. And as she's running out, headlights come shining towards her, and out of this car that's pulling up comes Ben, Dwayne Jones, and he kind of pushes her back inside, closes the door behind him. And the music in this scene is so disorienting and aggressive. It's just like almost sounds like TV static, but it's really loud. It like made me feel very uncomfortable. It's effective in the scene because it makes you feel very stressed. It's very stressful music that has no like melody to it. It's just like it's just noise.
Ooh.
And so Ben gets in. His name is Ben, Dwayne Jones, and he comes in and seems like he's got a plan. He's on a mission. Like he's a lot more with it than Barbara, who is like completely
not surprised by the ghouls, perhaps.
Yeah, or just like he's got better kind of survival instincts, it seems. Barbara is just kind of walking around screaming and crying, and Ben is like stay with me here, like we need to figure out what to do. And he's like checking the phones. He's like, I'm guessing you already tried that. And basically upon his arrival, Barbara kind of turns just like catatonic. Like she was in a bit of a survival mode, and now that someone else is there, it's almost like she's like, okay, great. Like here I go. I'm gonna turn off.
She's and, like someone else is in charge, mm-hmm, taking the reins.
Yeah, and I mean she is in complete shock.
Yeah,
but yeah, she is no help at all to Ben, who is like desperately like, this is a pretty serious situation. I could use some help. And she's just kind of walking around the house, looking at things and like really.
Oh, cool. You're good. I'm going to take a tour.
She's like, look at that. Ooh, look at that door over there.
Mm-hmm. And eventually she comes to for a minute and says, she just starts freaking out. Like, I think she says like, Johnny's out there. Like she remembers, like she needs to go back to get Johnny. She's like, I gotta go out. And he like holds her back. He's like, no, you can't go out there. Oh. And at this point, there's only three of the ghouls outside. And so, Ben is kind of, he's trying to calm her down. And he says, there's only three out there. I can take three. I can handle this. Like, you need to stay in here. Stay calm. I'm going to go handle those three. And like seats her down and goes outside with a tire iron and just bashes in the skulls of three ghouls.
And are they slow moving?
They are slow moving, but they are determined.
They're hungry.
What they lack in speed, they make up for in ambition.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, exactly. Mm-hmm. As he is outside bashing some skulls, we see one has come in through the back door and is sneaking up on Barbara, who is just sitting in a chair, oblivious. And Ben comes back inside right at the last second and
phew,
freaking kills that one too, bashes his head in. Barbara stares at this now dead ghoul, and Ben says, don't look at it, and drags it outside by his ankles and lights it on fire and puts it like in front of the front door of the house. And there's like another ghoul out there now approaching, And you can see that it is kind of repelled by the fire. Once it sees the fire, it kind of backs off.
So we're getting the sense that Ben has dealt with this before.
Yeah. He seems to be, yeah, more knowledgeable and just
resourceful.
More resourceful, yeah. Yeah. So then he puts the body on fire outside, he then goes back inside, closes the door, and he says to Barbara, like, we need to board up the windows. We can be safe in here. If we board up the windows, like, we'll be safe and we'll be able to wait it out here until someone comes to rescue us. And
this isn't his house.
This isn't his house, no. I think at some point Barbara shows him the dead body upstairs. Yeah. And so it's just them two in there, and he's trying to get her to help him board up the windows. She is no help at all. And he kind of like grabs her by the shoulders and is like, listen, like, I know you're afraid. I'm afraid too. And like, it's really important that we work together right now. And that's how we're going to stay safe. And that's how we're going to get out of this, is if you help me just board up the windows. Like, could you look for some wood that we could use to board up the windows? And she kind of like nods, like, yeah, okay, okay. And he like is breaking a table. He's taking indoor doors off hinges to like nail them across other doors. And she like goes to the fireplace and gets pieces of kindling.
And so a pretty progressive film for Black people, not so much for women.
Yeah. And apparently, I guess her character was written as more competent, and that this actress, this is just what she did, and they were...
No, I don't think she would be. I think she's going to be inept. Just feels right.
Yeah, and I read something that in the trivia that in the Night of the Living Dead remake in the 90s, that they kind of went back to the initial plan of having her be more badass. There's also quite a few sequels to this movie that I don't know their names. I think there are three sequels or three total. I'm sorry, I didn't look it up. I don't know, but I think Day of the Dead, Dawn of the Dead. Who knows? I feel like some of those are sequels for them for sure.
Oh, is Dawn of the Dead a sequel for this?
I know that Day of the Dead is. Dawn of the Dead, I'm not positive.
It'd be crazy if those were unrelated movies. Night of the Living Dead, Day of the Dead, Dawn of the Dead.
That must be.
By the way, we're coming for you, Barb. They're coming for you, Barbara. It's from Shaun of the Dead.
Ah, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. That's a clever, clever line for them to use in that movie. It's very appropriate. So she like brings her little pile of kindling and sets it on the table next to him. It's very funny. And he just kind of looks at it and is like, okay, great. That's going to be a really big help. And he's boarding up the windows and doors, hammering. She kind of is like helping him hold a door for a bit. And he starts telling her his story of the events leading up to where they are now. He says, I was at a diner and all of a sudden this huge truck started barreling down the road and those things were following it. I couldn't see them at first, but I knew something was wrong by the way the truck was like driving out of control. And then it drove through a gas station and caught on fire. I didn't know if the truck was going to explode. I ran out to a car outside that had a radio to hop in to like listen to the radio to see if anything was going on. And that's when I heard these events were happening all over. And I went to turn to go back into the diner to try to get someone to help. But the diner was encircled by those things already. And so I had no choice but to just get into the car and drive. And I had to drive through them. And they didn't even try to move out of the way. They were walking towards my car as I was driving at them, just plowing through them. And he says, and this is where I learned that they were afraid of fire because the truck was on fire and they kind of stayed away from that. So he's had a run-in with them, and he finishes telling this story, and then Barbara starts to slowly tell her story, and she says, I was in the cemetery with my brother, with Johnny. And Johnny said, can I have some candy? And I said, we don't have any candy, Johnny. And I don't think these things happened. And it's really weird. I watched it twice to see if maybe I missed it. And I can't tell if these are things that she's referring to that happened before, you know, on the drive over. But it's kind of effective because it just makes her seem like she is really not doing well. And he's like, and then
well, let me take you back to where it all started. Days ago, I asked my brother for candy, and he said we didn't have any candy.
Also,
and then I went to sleep, and then I woke up the next day, and I still wanted the candy.
Getting Ben's story also is scary because it makes you realize that this is like a pervasive issue. It's not just happening to them; it's happening everywhere.
Yeah, and I love that trope in horror movies where it's like, oh, this is beyond what we're even just seeing. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no escape.
Mm-hmm. There's no escaping it. It's everywhere.
Yeah.
Spooky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she says, then we were at the cemetery and he was messing with me and I said, stop it, Johnny. Stop that, Johnny. And he said, there's one of them right over there. And I just walked over to the man to try to apologize to him. And then I said, excuse me, mister, my brother didn't mean it. And like none of that happened. So she's just kind of, I don't know, in a different little reality, in shock. Well, I mean, she's in shock. It's effective because it's like unsettling to see her say things that didn't happen.
Yeah.
And you see Ben kind of looking at her. She's getting more distressed as she is retelling, and she starts kind of clawing at her coat, and she's like, it's really, really hot in here. Is it so hot in here? And he's like, why don't you just calm down? And she's like, it's so hot. And she's starting to really freak out. And she's like, and Johnny's still out there. He's still out there. We have to go get Johnny. And he's like, I think you should just calm down. And she jumps up and says, no, we have to get Johnny. Listen to me. Johnny's out there, and starts trying to push it past him to get to the door. And he blocks her, and she slaps him across the face, and he pauses and looks at her, and he punches her in the face.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. I love it.
And she either knocks her out or she might faint. I think she faints. I think she is not knocked out, but then like looks at him like, and then faints.
That's such a surprising move.
Oh my God.
I know, but it is like she's putting both of them in danger. Like there's nothing good going to come out of her like panic walking out of this front door. She's mm-hmm. going to potentially just get them both killed. But so
punch is a big choice.
It's a big choice. It's a big choice for sure.
Yes, I'm like totally shocked he punches her.
It's,
oh my God.
It's shocking. But then he scoops her up and he lays her down and he takes her little coat off because she said she was hot.
Okay.
And then he finds a radio in the house and turns it on and it's working. And we hear the radio, people on the radio. What do you call a radio person? Reporter, I guess.
Announcer.
Like a news.
Disc jockey.
The radio DJ stops spinning his sweet, sweet tunes. And
a host.
Yeah. An announcer, radio announcer, reporter. He says that the news stations or the radio stations around are kind of pooling their resources so that they'll be able to stay on the air and give constant updates about what's going on, and says there seems to be an epidemic of mass murder with no explanation. People are just killing people randomly in the streets, and we do have a description of the people, and they are ordinary looking people. And some people describe them as maybe being in a trance.
Hmm.
Ben looks out the window through, I mean, there's like a, there's boards up over most of the windows. He's kind of said, he had said earlier, like, we'll have to reinforce them more later, but this will be good for the time being. He's kind of looking out through one of the little slats in the windows and sees more of the ghouls coming. Seems like whenever they make a lot of noise, more comes. So she was just really screaming at him, and I think probably gave their position away. Mm-hmm. So now more are coming. And so he sees that the the body that he had lit on fire outside is out. And so he decides that he needs to make another fire to keep them away. And he rolls a little armchair up to the front door, covers in lighter fluid, lights it, puts it out on the front patio, and keeps them, they all back off again. And then he's kind of exploring the house a bit, looking in closets, seeing what he can find, if he can get any, I don't know, anything. And he finds in one of the closets a few pairs of women's shoes. And Barbara has lost her shoes, I think, in running from the car. And so he finds her a pair of shoes, pulls that out for her. And also in the closet is a shotgun. And
an interesting
bullets.
Closet.
Shoes and a shotgun.
Everything you need. Everything you need. And he goes back out to the living area where Barbara's on the couch, and she's woken back up again, kind of catatonic-y. And he gives her shoes, says, here's shoes for you. I'm going to go upstairs. Like, I can't tell if you can understand what I'm saying, but I'll be upstairs. I'm checking for supplies. And if anything happens, I'll be able to hear it. Just call out if you need me. And she doesn't respond. He goes upstairs. And
if I'm him, I am so anxious about being in a house with her. I'm like, what is this lady going to do to us?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's stressful. So he goes upstairs and he moves the dead body from upstairs, kind of out of right as you walk up the stairs, kind of just drags it away into another room or something. And he's digging around up there, and Barbara is kind of looking around downstairs and looks at the cellar door and hears something. And the cellar door starts to slowly open, and you see a hand come out. And then we go back upstairs and just hear her screaming. And Ben runs down, and I think he still has the shotgun. He runs down, and there's two men coming out of the cellar, and they both put their hands up and they say, like, don't shoot. Like, we were just hiding down there for safety. We're not ghouls or whatever. And so they all kind of settle down, and he says, how long have you been down there? And they kind of say, one of them says, you know, we heard screaming and we heard a lot of banging. And he says, you heard screaming and you didn't think you should come upstairs to, like, check that everything was okay. And he said, no, like, we couldn't actually really hear anything down there. It was really hard to hear. And they're just a little weird. And Ben is like, oh, okay. And these two men are named Harry and Tom. And Harry is kind of more suspicious, more kind of out for himself. Tom is kind of like, oh, we've got more people here. This is good. Harry's kind of like keeping to himself.
Were they friends before meeting in this cellar?
I don't think so.
Okay.
And they say that they have other people down in the cellar too. There's also Harry's wife and daughter, and the daughter is sick, and Tom's girlfriend Judy.
There's also a character named Judy.
So many Judys.
played by a real life Judy.
Okay.
Ben says, you know, great, you guys can help me reinforce the windows. If we get this place, like, fully reinforced, we'll be safe here. And Harry is not on board with this plan. He says, we need to stay in the cellar. That's the safest place. And they get in this pretty big argument about whether being in the house is safer or being in the cellar is safer. And I really did go back and forth. At first, I wasn't sure. And basically, Ben says, if we're in the cellar, there's only one door, only one way in and out.
Yeah, there's no one point of entry. Yeah.
Yeah.
And up here, we could get out multiple ways if something were to happen. And we can always go into the cellar if we need to. And and Harry's just says, you know, no, that if we all go into the cellar, we could guard the door. It's we can reinforce that door. It'll be very safe. And So Harry's like, hell no, I'm not. I'm staying in the cellar. You guys can stay up here. And Tom says, I think I will stay up here. I'll help you reinforce the windows. And as they say that, some hands burst through the windows, through the little gaps in the boarding up. And a few ghouls are trying to break in. And Ben grabs the gun and aims it and shoots one of them basically in the heart. And it kind of stumbles back and then keeps coming forward. And he shoots it in the heart again. Same thing. And so he shoots it right between the eyes. And then it does die and falls, collapses dead. So we're getting some info there that headshot might be the only way to kill them.
Classic zombie situation.
Classic always. Zombies. Classic zombies.
Gotta get him in the head.
Mm-hmm. But with all this noise now, gunshots and some screaming, and there's now a lot more of the ghouls coming. We see maybe 15 or 20 approaching. And Harry says, you know, I'm going downstairs. I'm going into the cellar. I don't care what you guys say. And Tom says, okay, I'm staying up here. Harry goes down, sends up Judy, Tom's girlfriend, and Harry goes down and boards up the door. There's like little slats that you can slide in, little reinforcements for the cellar door so that you can take on and off. So he doesn't have to hammer reinforcements on it, just a little thing that you slide in. And so in the cellar, we meet his wife and daughter, Helen and Karen. And Helen seems to be pissed at Harry already. And Harry is kind of an asshole and basically is like, yeah, they wanted to stay out there. I told him, we got to be down here. This is the safest place. And she's like, and that's important to you, right? To always be right. And everybody else is wrong. Like, I know that's very important to you. And like bickering.
All right.
And he says, yeah, I mean, the radio said that, you know, they're reporting that this is happening everywhere. So we don't know. It's safest down here. And she's like, wait, the radio, they have a radio up there. And he says, yeah. And she's like, well, get out of the way. Like, I got to go up there. Like, are you crazy? Like, I want to hear what's happening. And she basically like pushes Harry out. She's like, I'm going upstairs, moves the things from the door and goes upstairs and asks Judy to go down and watch Karen, their daughter, while she can kind of come upstairs and listen to the radio report for a while. Judy says fine, goes down and watches Karen. And at this point, Barbara is laying on the couch and playing with like a doily. And just like looking at the little cloth and like running it in her fingers. And Helen kind of walks up and looks at her and is like, oh boy. And they say that they found a television. And so Tom and Ben are rolling out a television and plug it in. And they get a full news report now. And through this, we learn persons who have recently died are returning to life.
Okay.
And everyone's kind of watching this news report, really disturbed. And in the news report, they say they're setting up rescue stations and saying, like, if you can make your way to one of these rescue stations, there's medical care there. They're guarded, so they're safe. And so they start listing the stations, and they hear the one that's closest to them. It's 17 miles away. And oof. Their truck that they have has basically no gas. And so it's like the truck that Ben had driven there. And he said, the reason I pulled in here was because I saw there is a gas pump, but it's locked. So we need to figure out how to unlock that, get gas in there, and then we can take that and drive that to the rescue station. Also on the news, we hear that a satellite exploded on its way back from Venus. And could the radiation be responsible for what's happening now? So
that's one could big it? Satellite with a lot of radiation involved.
Yeah, I guess so.
Feels like a pretty dangerous satellite.
Mm-hmm. So Helen goes back down to her daughter, Karen, and says, like, Judy, you can go back upstairs. And we hear Helen say, like, maybe she's, like, we don't know what's wrong with her. She might just be in shock. Like, it was a really scary day. She's just, Karen's just laying. She's got, like, a fever. And so Judy can go up and watch the news report as well. They're getting more information. And the reporter says, after people die, it's only a matter of minutes before they come back to life. And so you need to burn their bodies. So, and someone says, a couple minutes, that doesn't give you much time to make funeral arrangements. And they're like, no, like there will be no funerals. Like, you need to burn their bodies immediately after they die.
What a specific radiation.
Very specific radiation. And Ben is kind of taking charge again. He says, okay, is there a fruit cellar here? We need to make some Molotov cocktails. And I don't know what a fruit cellar is. It's a term that they use in Psycho as well. It seems like it's different from the cellar because they talk about they're in the cellar. He knows there's a cellar. So he says, but is there a fruit cellar? A separate type of cellar?
But how about a fruit cellar?
Which I guess is where you keep your fruit, like, because he says we need like bottles,
like canning and stuff.
Canned things, yeah, that kind of thing.
Yeah, maybe when people used to do, yeah, canning and stuff more regularly,
right? And in Psycho, they do go down there. It does seem like there's jars, shelves of jars. Anyways, I just
shelves of jars.
Just had not heard of a fruit cellar before, and apparently it was a thing in the 60s. And so he says we need to make Molotov cocktails so you can as Tom and I try to get the truck to the gas pump, unlock the gas pump, like, we'll need someone covering our backs so
ready to fucking throw these
Molotov cocktails. And so they do that. They find some bottles, they start whipping up some Molotov cocktails.
What is that? Is fabric dipped in lighter fluid in a bottle?
Yeah, I think it can be also just alcohol, just anything flammable.
Right. Flammable, and you put like a little cloth in it in a bottle so that you light the tip of the cloth and then you
uh-huh. And then as you throw it, it like lights a fire. Yeah, apparently.
Dangerous.
I've only seen it in movies, but I imagine that it does something.
So it seems bad if you're on the receiving end.
Sure. So Tom and Judy have a little talk before he goes out. He's like, I got to do this. Judy's scared. Judy says, I don't know. Like, this sounds really dangerous. I don't know if you should do this. And he's reassuring her. They're having a sweet moment. And he says, you know, this is what's going to save us. If we stay here, we're going to die. So we need to, like, I promise I'm going to protect you. They have a nice kiss. And yeah, you're not feeling good about
bye.
This.
Yeah.
Bye. And
nice knowing you. We wish you the best.
And we wish him the best. We really
we
do.
We really wish him the best.
And so Ben and Tom are getting ready to go out the front door. And as Tom heads out, Judy like sticks her head out and they just had to have one last look at each other, really driving it home. And I was like, oh boy, whatever's about to happen is not going to be good. And they have one long look and we see Harry is upstairs with the Molotov cocktails at the ready. And Ben and Tom make a run for the truck. And Harry is throwing Molotov cocktails at any of the ghouls that are getting too close to them, kind of making these little firewalls for them to safely get to the truck. And at the last second, Judy runs out that front door and Tom looks very upset. And Tom is in the truck already. Ben hasn't gotten in the truck yet. And Ben kind of looks at her and she gets past the front porch and you can see that she really regrets her decision. She kind of turns back and looks at the front door, which they've closed and boarded again because they can't just leave the door open. And she kind of looks like, oh fuck. And Ben says, if you're going to come, like get in the truck. And so the three of them get in the truck. and start driving towards the back of the property is where the gas pump is. And, you know, there's fire around them. There's a lot of ghouls now. It's very stressful. They get to the gas pump, and Tom and Ben jump out, and Ben has the shotgun and shoots at the pump where the lock, like, shoots off the lock of the pump so that they can get it. And he's like, okay, like, get the gas. And the way that Tom fucks this up is incredible. I mean, it looks like he didn't even try to do a good job. He's panicked. But he basically grabs the gas pump and just immediately starts spraying gasoline everywhere. And he's running towards the car, and he sprays gasoline all over the car. And what? Ben is like, what are you, like, well, careful. They have a torch with them for light. And he's like, careful of the torch. And Tom just drops the torch onto the big line of gasoline that he's just poured everywhere, including all over the car. Car catches on fire, the ground catches on fire, Tom says, we gotta get away from the pump, because there's, you know, obviously like a reserve of gasoline underground or wherever. And so Ben is like taking a blanket, trying to pat out the fire that's leading back to the pump. Tom hops in the car with Judy, and
the car that's covered in gasoline?
Yes, and starts driving back to the house with her.
Oh god.
And is trying to like make a mad dash to get back to the house, and he jumps out of the car to go run inside, and Judy is frozen in fear, and he goes back in to get her, and the car explodes.
Oh my god.
With both of them in it.
Well, they died together.
They died together, and they sure did love each other, as we saw by that final little look. And
I think this is the part of the movie where the kids started to be a little upset, more traumatized.
Probably not liking it.
This is the turn. This is when they were like, wait a minute. This movie isn't fun anymore.
Wait a minute. Wait a second.
Hold on. These teens aren't supposed to die.
These adult teens.
Adult 30-year-old teens.
Some Riverdale-looking teens. Actually, even older. Even older than Riverdale. Yeah.
Riverdale's still at least in their 20s.
Yeah, these look like full 30s, but I guess they weren't. So
to say.
Ben sees this happen. Harry sees it happen from the house, and everyone looks horrified. Ben starts he's gotten the fire out that was going back to the pump, so that's not going to explode, so that's good. But there's ghouls everywhere now. And he's outside, and now there's no truck for them to drive to any rescue centers, so he's just got to get back into the house. So he runs towards the house, and we see Harry inside the house kind of run down to the front door to let him in, and then change his mind and kind of step back. And Ben is banging on the front door, like, let me in. And Harry's just like taking a step back and a step back and kind of retreating. Eventually, Ben breaks the door down and gets inside, closes it, and immediately has to start boarding it up again. And Harry comes to help him board it up, because we all need the door boarded up. And so they're both like hammering and trying to get this door boarded back up. And as soon as they get it boarded up, Ben just starts beating the shit out of Harry.
Oh my god.
If he'll punch Barbara, he'll punch Harry.
Yeah, amen. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This is a tense situation. He'll punch anybody.
He'll punch anybody if he has to.
Mm-hmm. And we see outside the ghouls going into that truck and pulling out little, I don't know, body parts and start eating
some barbecue.
Tom and Judy. It really looks obviously like just regular food. It looks like chicken drumsticks and like
chicken drumsticks
and like little sausage links are supposed to be the intestines. I'm sure there's a lot of chocolate sauce used in this scene.
Chocolate sauce on sausage links.
Gross. Ew, yeah, I bet that is what they had to eat.
Ew, that's so gross.
Back on the TV inside, they've got the TV on still, and the reporter says there's like rescue teams heading out, like teams of large groups of people with guns. And they said, we've kind of figured out that you have to shoot them in the head to kill them. And the radiation has like messed with their brain stem, or the brain of a ghoul is activated by radiation. So if you kill the brain, you kill the ghoul. And so these rescue teams are coming out that are just like basically walking and shooting them right in the head. And So this is good. This is good news. Maybe we're getting as we're getting more information, it seems like we're better equipped to maybe get this under control. But as they're watching this, it's now just Ben, Harry, Helen, and Barbara, and
Karen's still down in the cellar.
And the power goes off.
Oh no!
And we see that there's even more ghouls. I mean, there's been an explosion now. I think if they're attracted to noise, they are really attracted to what's happening here. And everyone starts like freaking out. And Harry whispers to Helen, like, we got to get that shotgun, and is seemingly planning something not good. He's not a team player is what's happening.
Not a team player.
No, he's not.
And we again see kind of hands bursting through the windows. These ghouls are closing in. Ben is kind of trying to reinforce the main window that they're coming through, and is looking to Harry for help. Is like, help me, help me. And Harry won't go to help him. And because Ben had a gun in one hand and was kind of holding the door with the other, and he needs both hands, so he sets the gun down to use both of his hands.
Oh, man.
And you see Harry's eyes just light up, and you see
what the fuck?
Helen notice it too. And Helen looks like not happy with her husband's plan, but she sees what's going through his head.
She has not seemed happy with him this whole time.
She is not happy with him. She sees what's about to happen. She looks very stressed. Harry goes for that shotgun, grabs it, points it right at Ben, and says, like, do what you want. Like, we're going in the cellar. And, like, it's such an unnecessary conflict here. Like, I don't know why he does that.
Yeah.
But he basically is about to shoot Ben, and Ben, like, lunges at him, knocks the gun out of his hand, gets it from him, and shoots him. And shoots,
oh my God.
Yeah, shoots Harry in the stomach. And
oh whoa.
And Barbara's screaming, Helen's screaming, Harry stumbles backwards into the cellar.
Ooh, shot in the stomach, as we've said.
It's a bad
that's
one.
That's bad.
He stumbles back and falls into the cellar. And we see
with his daughter. Great.
Mm-hmm. And we see Helen is starting to get attacked through openings in the windows. Hands are grabbing her and pulling her. Barbara has a moment of lucidity, and she kind of sees that Helen is in trouble, gets up and hits their arms away, and is able to get Helen free. But in doing so, she is also now being grabbed by them. But Helen gets free and runs down into that cellar to her husband, and he is being eaten by his daughter.
Oh, gross. Is he still alive at this point?
He's not alive. She has eaten off his whole arm, and she is just...
Ew.
Nom, 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 nom.
Oh, gross.
Bad day for Helen.
Really gobbling it down. Helen screams, says, Karen, what's happening? Karen turns her attention to Helen, and...
I mean... Helen, you gotta know.
You gotta know.
What do you mean, Karen? What's happening? She's eating your husband.
You figured it out. You figured it out by now.
I think you know.
Do we only become a ghoul if you've already died? Did the fever kill her and 3 minutes later she became a ghoul?
Yeah, I guess
maybe.
So.
Wow.
Or maybe she'd been bit.
Yeah, it's only a matter of minutes. She might have been bit, or it might just be that anyone that dies of any... I think they say that anyone that dies...
Yeah. Mysterious radiation.
They get this radiation and it reanimates them. So she turns her direction to her attention to her mom, Karen does, and grabs like a little... Looks like a pointed shovel, like a little spade, and raises it over her head And Helen says, no, Karen. And she brings it down and she stabs her a whole bunch of times. And it's quite intense for, I think, a movie from the 60s. It's an upsetting scene.
The kids are not liking this.
The kids are not having a good time at this point.
They're really saying, what the frick is going on?
This isn't fun anymore.
The one person we related to. What's happening?
So upstairs now, it's only Ben and Barbara. Barbara is being grabbed by a few different sets of hands. Looks like she's about to be pulled outside, and they break the door open, the ghouls, and grab her. And we see that she is pulled outside by none other than her brother, who is now a ghoul.
Yeah, very much.
And
so,
she is pulled out screaming, Johnny, no, Johnny, no. Pulled out. Ben sees this, is like, oh, fuck, the door's open. They're now starting to pour in, and he realizes he's got to go in that cellar. That's the only spot that he can reinforce now. It's his best shot. So he goes in, he starts boarding up that door, putting all those little planks of wood in place. And there's a lot of ghouls in here. They're banging on the door, but it looks reinforced pretty well. He goes downstairs and sees the horrible scene happening down there, and first sees Harry. And oh, actually, before he went into the cellar, he saw Karen. Karen came out of the cellar and was like sneaking up behind him, and he sees her just in time and kind of throws her out of the way. So he goes into the cellar, and we know that Karen is not in the cellar. So
that is
Harry and Helen.
Her parents.
Yeah, the parents are down there, and he sees Harry, and Harry shoots up without an arm and starts going for him, and he just shoots him right in between the eyes, headshot.
Not a hard call for Ben.
No hesitation at all. And then he sees Helen, who is covered in blood, and he looks a little more sad about this one. And then Helen wakes right up as well and comes for him. And again, no hesitation, shoots her in the head. Mm-hmm. Ben doesn't fuck around.
You gotta do it.
Ben's doing pretty good.
So he's just down there now and basically waiting for this rescue squad, I guess. Oh yeah, and we see that the sun is now starting to come up.
Oh yay! It's
starting to be daytime.
You love to see it.
But we are still like hearing all the ghouls upstairs banging on the door, and it's a dire situation. And then it just cuts to the next morning, and we get some like exterior shots, and it seems quite calm and peaceful, and we're not sure like, are the ghouls still in the house? Did they leave the house? What's going on? And we see a helicopter in the sky, and we see the rescue team kind of spread out across the fields and the farms, and kind of basically making a sweep through the rural roads.
The rural roads.
And then we
that just reminded me of, sorry, did you guys watch 30 Rock?
Uh-huh.
Oh, the rural juror. Jenna's movie, The Rural Juror, and nobody knows what it's called. The Rural Juror. What a good joke. What a stupid joke.
Oh
anyway.
My God, it is really funny though. And we see that back in the house, there's like a few lingering ghouls, but they've kind of spread out. They're all kind of have wandered off on their own in different directions. So we see that this rescue team is like pretty easily killing them one by one, because they're not in a swarm anymore. They've all kind of fanned out. And Ben hears the helicopter, and he starts, he has a shotgun, and he's like nervously opens the door, peeks out. He doesn't see any ghouls, and kind of makes his way. It's still dark in the house because all the windows and doors are still boarded up for the most part. Some light's coming in, and he kind of is peeking out of one of the windows with his gun aimed outside in case of any ghouls. And outside, the rescue team says, looks like there's another one in that house. And the one of the guys on the rescue team loads his gun and he says, yeah, shoot him. Make sure you get it right between the eyes. Shoots him right between the eyes. The guy says, good shot.
Oh, my God. It's fucking heartbreaking.
Ben dies.
Oh.
Yep.
What the fuck? That's so dark.
And then it goes to still images similar to the trailer of them coming in, and basically they had said before, like, another one for the fire because they got to burn those bodies. And they come in with like meat hooks and like drag him out on a hook, and you see them pulling all these bodies onto a pile and burn them. And that's the end of the movie.
What? Oh my God.
Yeah, that is messed up. That is, it's such a nihilistic ending. It's so crazy.
And you know what? So we had,
oh God.
We had talked about this movie a little bit after watching Horror Noir. The documentary talked about it, and it says the ending of it in Horror Noir. So and I remembered, but I kind of forgot right at the end.
As we started approaching this, I was like, oh, wait, I think this ends badly for him. But oh my God.
And so I remembered it like right before. It was very funny. As he like comes upstairs and you can see them getting close and him. And I like remembered it at the moment. I was like, oh, motherfucker. Like, I got so mad because I really for a moment was tricked.
That is so upsetting.
I was tricked. I thought it was going to be okay.
It's so upsetting. I didn't know it was that bad of a death too. That he's shot in the head and then the meat hook and then burned on with a bunch of other bodies. Mm-hmm. That's extremely upsetting. Right. Yeah.
Fucking Christ.
You guys, there were like 6-year-olds in the audience for this movie.
Yeah, not good. Not good.
I hope they left by the end.
I hope they're okay today. I hope they're doing okay.
Is that why boomers are such a tough generation? This exact movie.
It's because of this
movie. Oh my God.
Whoa.
But I like that it has some of these kind of classic things that have gone on to, I mean, and I don't know that this is the first movie that did any of these things, but I like that it has this kind of opening scene that's kind of different from the rest of the movie. Kind of reminds me of, you know, Scream and those kind of things where the opening scene is almost like a self-contained little short film type thing. I like that. And then also just the bleak ending, which...
That is I feel like we haven't had a movie with such a bleak ending in a while.
That's true.
For whatever reason, even like St. Maude didn't feel as bleak because she was heading towards a bad conclusion.
Yeah. Bad. Yeah.
But like, holy shit, he made it. He survived.
Despite all odds, despite like all the boundaries put up also with it, from the humans that were in the house with him.
Yeah, like the only true survivor of this whole fucking thing.
Also kind of like Psycho, this movie, you start in the beginning, you think the protagonist is going to be Barbara. Right.
Yeah.
And then she doesn't get killed off right away, like what happens in Psycho, but you still like, clearly you transition to Ben being the protagonist because she just becomes like catatonic and useless.
And then just dies.
And then dies eventually.
Damn.
Yeah.
Ben didn't deserve it.
Bleak one.
Yeah, but you can also see, I mean, it feels like obvious, but you can see a lot of the ways that you can see this movie as a metaphor for racial inequity and whiteness, white supremacy. Right. And I mean, it's so on the face now.
Right. And it's so interesting that that's like not the movie that he set out to make. And it just like, kind of became that by this casting.
If he were white, it would still obviously be bleak. But yeah, I definitely would just be like, oh man, oof.
Also because he's like, he's doing fucking everything while the white people are fucking useless.
Right. Yeah.
Like he's the one who's actually boarding up the house. He's the one who's keeping his cool, has the intelligence to like know what's going on, but nonetheless is not trusted by anyone in the house and is treated like a piece of shit by everyone and not respected. Mm-hmm. And it's like he has to do everything on his own.
Right.
And then
dies.
Ben is murdered by a stupid white person at the end, despite everything he's accomplished. God, it makes me mad.
Wow. It is, yeah. I mean, it's great. I'm really glad that I watched it. I mean, again, I just don't think that I would have ever seen it. And this podcast has just expanded all of our horizons so much.
Oh, I love this podcast.
I love it too.
I fucking love this podcast. I also just want to say that I also read that in an interview in the New York Times, Jordan Peele talks about how Night of the Living Dead really influenced Get Out, specifically saying, like, what happens when all social norms break down, when this event happens and a man is caged up in a house with a white woman who's terrified, but you're not sure how much she's terrified at the monsters on the outside or if she's terrified of the man on the inside who's now the hero. Right.
I remember Jordan Peele being interviewed in Horror Noir and actually saying, referencing the ending of this movie as
I was going to say,
also part of why he ended Get Out differently, right? Like that he was like, we've seen this ending and I wanted to do something different because it's very upsetting.
It's too dark.
If Get Out had ended with him, with those actually being the cops, it would feel a lot like this.
Right.
Yeah. Of like, look at all he fucking did and made it through. And then this.
Yeah.
Wow. Sammy, yikes. Thank you for doing this one for us.
Hey, of course.
It's cool to go back to some of the
classics. Now I want to watch Shaun of the Dead too.
I do too. We just rewatched Hot Fuzz the other day and it was such
a fun time.
Such a fun time.
Yeah, I'm excited. I think Edgar Wright actually has a horror movie that's supposed to be coming out whenever movies come out again.
When things can happen. I think that you're right.
There weren't too many. Were there any spooky voices?
No,
in
we
this?
Can do some ghouly moans.
Can I just say also calling them ghouls, like, is so not scary. The word ghoul is not scary anymore.
Yeah. It feels very like Halloween-y. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it feels very Hallmark.
It feels like a children's version of a monster. Yeah. A ghoul.
Yeah, goblins and ghouls.
Mm-hmm. But it really is like kind of a gross word. Like it does sort of, take that context out, it's just like a ghoul. Like, yeah.
Yeah, no thanks. Okay, ghouly, ghouly goodbye.
Okay, ghoulies. From all of us here at Too Scary to Watch, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Hello, and thank you for listening to another episode of Too Scary. Didn't watch the podcast for people who are too scared of scary movies, so we watch scary movies so that you don't have to, because sometimes a movie is just too scary that you have to turn to your favorite podcast, Too Scary. Didn't watch. If you like the show and you would like to support us, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or rate or review us on Apple Podcasts. You can also follow us on social media at TSDW Podcast. Again, that is Too Scary. Didn't watch. We are on Instagram and Twitter, or for bonus content and fun other things, you can join our Patreon at patreon.com/TSDW podcast or search for Too Scary. Didn't watch Patreon. That might work too. Otherwise, we will see you here next week for a new episode of Too Scary. Didn't watch. We will see you then. Goodbye.